free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, May 1st, 2020. Mayday, mayday. I'm David Knight, your host. I guess that's what the Michigan governor is saying. You see the top of the Drudge Report, protesters took to the Michigan Capitol again Thursday against the governor's stay-at-home orders. Hundreds of protesters, some carrying guns, getting in the face of the people who are there. And of course, we've got clips of similar things happening across the country. And in many nations, people in Germany, you can't lock us down anymore, they're saying. People in France, we cannot be ruled by quote-unquote experts because they don't really know what they're talking about. We got clips of people being arrested in North Carolina as they protest. The cops come up to them and say, tell me whether or not you've been tested. And if they don't say anything to the cops haul these people off. This is where we're headed. This is the second wave of tyranny, the testing. And folks, this is a test. This is a test of your willpower, your backbone, your will to survive, your will to be free. Because this isn't about pragmatism. This isn't about being protected. This is not about safety, because we now have the Trump administration pushing to accelerate vaccine development. It was just a year ago that President Trump said in response to 650 people allegedly exposed to measles, nobody died. They were quarantined. That was the basis to push through mandatory vaccination laws in California, in New York, and elsewhere. And President Trump said at the time, they've got to take the shots. Well, no, we don't, President Trump. We don't. You got to obey the Constitution. I am sick and tired of this authoritarian streak magnified by ignorance. Because it's not pragmatic. It doesn't make us safer. None of this stuff makes us safer. Take a look at the grocery shelves, President Trump, if you think this is working. He tweeted out that he thinks, look, we did the right thing. He's taking responsibility for this, folks. You want to say that this is Fauci and it's Birx, and yes, it is. But he has given them the power to do this to us, and he is giving them the power to avoid all safety testing on vaccines and to rush this stuff out. He's empowering that as well. This has to stop. This will stop. We will not be your slaves. You have no authority to do this. The way we're going to do this is not by putting somebody else in office, because look, they've got Biden in there. He's senile. He will do whatever they wish. It's the same way they had a backup for Obamacare. They put in Mitt Romney because, you know, Romney had already done Obamacare in Massachusetts. What they have planned for us now and in the immediate future is going to be carried out by whoever is in the White House. We've got to find a way that we can push back on this at local levels. I'm telling you, there's another story coming out of another town in Italy. It's a small town, just a few hundred people. But like I was talking about yesterday, several small communities in the UK have put together their local community currency. I've seen this done in areas of North Carolina. Now, some of the people got in trouble when they tried to actually tie it to something real, like gold and silver. But one of the ways that you stop that is making sure that you have a local sheriff and that you have local officials who are going to stand with the community against people who are going to try to shut that down. They want to force their fiat currency on you like they want to force their fiat rules. And folks, this is, all of this is just tied together in a way to avoid any culpability for them in terms of the financial meltdown, the bubble that was going to burst. They can now blame that on the hypodermic needle, whether it's a vaccine or whether it is any other drug that they force on you. They can say it was a coronavirus. It wasn't the Federal Reserve policies. No, it was the Federal Reserve policies and other central banks. But they found a way to have a scapegoat, the coronavirus, which will also get you so afraid that you will accept every form of tyranny and the eradication of any individual liberty. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Friday, May 1st, year of our Lord, 2020. I'm David Knight, your host. Yes, it is May Day. Day 46 of America held hostage. And a lot of people have had enough of this. They don't want to have the masks put over their eyes or their mouths. Yeah, see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil. Social media is doing that to you, but you've also got governors who are trying to do that to you. In Michigan, people are pushing back hard against Whitmer. We had hundreds of protesters, many of them carrying guns in the state capitol. As one individual said, the virus is here. The virus is going to be here. We have to get back on with our lives. And you can see the angry pictures there of what's happening. We've got more clips of what's going on elsewhere throughout the country. The Michigan governor said, according to Babylon Bee, in a satire that has really become true, because this was about 8 days ago. Michigan governor says, revolting against a tyrannical government is simply un-American. Yeah. Protesting and revolting against your wise rulers goes against everything that America was built on. It flies in the face of American tradition. Revolting against tyranny has no place in this great country. Whitmer then rattled off a long list of things that she believes to be also un-American. Declaring independence from tyrants, having a list of protected rights, separation of powers, democratically elected leaders, freedom of religion, assembly, the press, protest and speech, federalism, apple pie, baseball, and America. Well, yeah, actually, those last three sound like exaggerations even for a satire, don't they? Except, have you seen the shelves lately in the grocery stores? American pie? maybe you can still find that. Meat's getting pretty scarce. Baseball's been shut down. America's being shut down. So as we look at the latest developments here, L.A. has become the first U.S. city now to offer countywide testing. This is an effort to reestablish the lockdown, folks. They're going to give you a little bit of freedom, a little bit of rope, and then say, but we got to test you. Oh, see, you're sick. All right, everybody locked down. See, it was the wrong thing to do. I'm telling you in advance, just like I told you 46 days ago, what was going to be happening at this point here. How bad this is going to be. They're continuing to move down this path. Don't believe them when they say they're going to let you out. It's a trap. One step forward, two steps back. That's the way they're going to push this thing. Lagarde is now warning that the Eurozone economy could shrink up to 12% in 2020, and she is way underestimating that. New York City is going to close the subways between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. for cleaning. Because, you know, after a month or so of a pandemic, according to, it's about time, right? Don't you think? They were bragging about how they were going to clean it every 72 hours before this began. I said, well, you know, they only have about 4 million people go through there every 72 hours. So that should be sufficient, right? They've got to get the vomit out of there whether it needs to or whether they need to or not. The Georgia governor is lifting the stay-at-home order. And again, see, this is a pushback by them. They're saying, this is human sacrifice. I told you that yesterday, The Atlantic. Georgia begins an experiment in human sacrifice. Everybody's going to die. And see, we're going to prove it to you because we're going to go out and test people. And we're going to find that even though 90% of the people never had any symptoms, we've got to lock you back down again. And then you have President Trump accelerating the Gates vaccine program. I'll repeat that. President Trump is going to accelerate the Gates vaccine program. They've already waived testing on animals for safety. And they're going to accelerate this. Operation Warp Speed. Operation Warp Speed. We're going to get into that in just a moment, but, you know, it was a year ago that President Trump had an abrupt turnaround on vaccines. It was April 24th, 2019, when President Trump was asked about a measles outbreak, allegedly, in L.A. Remember, they panicked. They said, oh, we had somebody come in. They flew in on an airplane, And we've got to lock everybody down. So they wound up quarantining a little over 650 people. Nobody died. But they used that type of thing to push mandatory vaccine laws in California, in New York, and elsewhere without any informed consent of the patients or the doctors. Any doctors who say, well, I know that this family here has, this child has had adverse reactions to vaccines before. And so I don't think they ought to be given a vaccine. You can't do that. We'll take your medical license, right? Just like Whitmer's talking about doing a couple of weeks ago about hydroxychloroquine. Then the FDA approved it, and then she started criticizing Trump because she wasn't given large supplies of it. But they did the mandates of vaccines, saying you could not go to school if you didn't get a vaccine. You had no religious exemptions. You had no, and of course, those were there because people were concerned about the ways that they had developed these vaccines using aborted baby parts and so forth. But you couldn't object to it because of health issues either. And your doctor couldn't object to it for health issues. And as that was happening, as everyone was being panicked by the media about a measles vaccine where nobody died, I don't know if they even identified anybody that seriously had a case of measles. They quarantined 650 people, and the press went on and on and on about it. And President Trump had this to say about a year ago. You guys got that clip? Let's run that.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
Yeah, they have to get their shots. And now they're going to accelerate that. And you're going to be hearing that over and over again, because now we've got something that is really serious. They laid the groundwork for measles, and now they're telling you, even though 90% of the people who have COVID-19 don't even know that they have it, 90%, they're going to say, no, 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 you got to take this vaccine, and we're not going to test it. We're not going to wait for that. So as I was reading the Babylon Bee mocking the in-your-face tyranny of Michigan's Governor Whitmer, she decided that she would, this is, as I point out, this is 8 days ago, the 22nd, 9 days ago. Yeah, it's un-American to protest tyrants. Well, you know what? History is repeating itself, just like in 1776, when you had people saying, well, we don't object to paying taxes. We object to having the taxes imposed on us without having any representation. And now, you know, back then what they did was they doubled down on it, right? They ignored what the people had to say and they doubled down on it. And that's exactly what our tyrants in 2020 are doing. Michigan governor's stay-at-home orders do not violate the residents' constitutional rights, rules a court. Oh, so therefore, that's fine, right? A court said it's okay. We've had other courts say, no, it's not okay. We've had other courts say, you can't shut down a business by declaring it to be non-essential. But they're saying in Michigan, you have a judge there who says, well, in my opinion, she can do whatever she wants. And so Governor Whitmer has issued a new executive order to extend the date of the emergency until May 28th. How's that, patriots? Yeah. You're going to get in my face and protest because I got you locked down? Well, I'll give you another month in jail. How about that? I find you in contempt of court and contempt of my dictates, and I'm going to extend it for another month, May 28th. And then we got in Illinois, we got a rule that means that a family can only legally be in their boat if it's in their garage. My family, who I live with every day, can't be on the boat with me in Illinois, said an individual. He says, as an example, he gathered his family together on the boat as it was parked in their garage. He said, I can't sit outside in it. We've got to sit in it inside. If you take it outside your garage, you'll be breaking the rule, right? I mean, I see social distancing as possible in the boat. Not that I want to do that with my kids and my wife. And at a press conference, the Illinois governor, Pritzker, said, it is restricted to two people on a boat. You can't have five people or 10 people on a boat, and that is restricted to two, but not necessarily restricted to whether they're related to one another. Welcome back. You know, you remember the puzzle where you've got the farmer has got to cross the river, and he's got a wolf, a sheep, and a cabbage. And he can only, and he's got a boat, and he can only, and he's got to get everybody across, but he can only take one other with him at a time. So what's it going to be? Is he going to take, you know, the wolf, the sheep, or the cabbage over first? It's an old, very old puzzle. Because, you know, if you leave them together, the wolf will eat the sheep, or the sheep will eat the cabbage. So what do you do? And which one do you take first? And if you take it first, then who do you take second? And it's a very complicated puzzle. Well, now you've got that kind of a situation in Illinois, as I point out, the governor, Illinois Governor Pritzker said Saturday, you have to now practice social distancing in boats, in the wide open, in the wide open. Again, there's no understanding. We're mocked by people who are pro-vaccine. You don't understand germs and viruses. Well, I don't think they understand germs and viruses. They think they're everywhere and they last forever. And everybody's going to die if you touch one. You don't have any immune system. Well, maybe you don't if you've taken one of their vaccines. But we're talking about being out in the open here. It's restricted to two people on a boat. You can't have five people. You can't have 10 people in a boat, said the governor of Illinois. Where'd he come up with this? Is this regulations and restrictions without representation? Is it time for another revolution? You bet it is. It says it's restricted to two, but it's not necessarily restricted to whether or not those two people are related to one another. See, isn't that nice? For the time being, he's being very, very liberal and broad-minded and tolerant, isn't he? Except liberals are never tolerant or broad-minded. So if there's a family of four or five, a husband, a wife, and kids, they're going to have to pick two of them at a time, said the governor. Yeah, they would have to do that, he said. Yeah. So you just leave the kids there. So the wolves come around and take your kids, while you and your wife are driving around the boat. The wolf, the sheep, and the cabbage. And I got to ask you, in this analogy, who's the wolf? Who's the sheep? And who's the vegetable without a brain? Are we sheep or are we cabbage? Where are we in this? Do you recognize the wolves in this scenario? As one guy says, well, by his analogy, I have to take my boat to the lake. I got to go pick one of them up at the dock, take them to the beach. I got to get another one and take them to the beach because they didn't. Or there couldn't be 100 people on the beach. There could be 100 people on the beach. I have to leave them there because I can only have two people on the boat. It gets more and more arbitrary, more and more insane. When President Trump, at the demands of, well, I shouldn't say President Trump, he's actually become the court jester. President Fauci and Vice President Birx said, you can't allow 50 people to get together. You got to take it down to 10. I said, where are they going to stop this? You're going to go down to two, down to one? Yep. I said that. I said, pretty soon they're going to be coming after homeschooling families. And I pointed out that, yeah, it didn't take very long. They came after a homeschool family of nine. You aren't social distancing. So we call the CPS on the family. Try to break them up. We'll make them small. CDC is now extending the social distancing guidelines to apply to pets, as I pointed out earlier this week. So make sure that it's not, you can't even have your pet there with you. We got to get down to 10, down to 2, down to 1, and no pet. Complete isolation. And so as the protesters go into Michigan, one guy said, the virus is here, it's going to be here. It's time to let people go back to work. That's all there is to it. And yeah, they're now talking, Bloomberg's got articles, the coronavirus pandemic is likely to last for 2 years. Or until we get everybody vaccinated. How about that? Going to keep you locked down until you're vaccinated. That's your ticket out. And then you get your little immunity passport, or maybe you won't need a passport. You just have that microdot tattoo that Bill Gates developed with MIT last fall. You know, got an app for that, special light. So you won't even see it. All of you sheep and vegetables out there watching CNN and Fox. I came in this morning to get coffee. And Fox and Friends in the morning, the one that they have before Fox and Friends. President Trump's favorite show. The one they have in the morning before that is just Ken and Barbie. They don't have more than two people. And they had a doctor on just talking about how this was going to be, the vaccine was going to be universally applied. Don't worry, we'll completely test it. It'll be absolutely safe. And yet they say, well, we're not even going to test it on animals. What are you talking about? We got to get this out. It's a pandemic now, right? I mean, this is worse than the measles, and it's more hidden. At least with the measles, you get little red dots. You don't even know if you got coronavirus because 90% of the people don't even have any symptoms. And to give you an idea of how insane this is, to keep talking about this being a pandemic, at the Michigan protests at the Capitol, the mayor of Detroit, Mike Duggan, said Whitner needs to allow routine medical visits and treatments so that people with health problems, diabetes, sickle cell anemia, they're all overdue for help. He said, the one thing that I'm really calling on the governor and our hospitals and our doctors to work on are opening up the medical system. I think the day-to-day health care of a lot of Detroiters is being neglected. That's right. That's why you've got doctors going out of business, nurses being laid off, or hospitals going out of business and doctors and nurses being laid off. Some of them closing for good, they said. Why? Because they've shut everything down to take care of the COVID patients, and the COVID patients are a no-show. So they're taking down the emergency Army hospital places. They're sending the emergency medical ships from the Navy home. Don't need them. Even in New York, the epicenter of the world virus, they didn't use the medical ship there. And we can't get any health care. The health care system is busted. We can't get meat. Distribution of everything is busted. You're destroying the energy production, the food supply, everything. Our jobs, our lives are being destroyed in this. It's here and it's going to stay, right? Can we just move on? We've had viruses before. We've had coronaviruses before. Maybe this is a little bit worse than some of the others, or maybe not. Because who are you going to get the information from? Anybody that you trust? You trust NIH? You trust CDC? I don't. I never have. The U.S. federal coronavirus guidelines are now fading out, they tell us, as the focus turns to reopening. It's a head fake. It's a head fake. They say they've got new guidelines coming out of the same university in Washington State, and Murphy, the guy who put together the model that was completely wrong about everything. It was completely wrong about death projections. It was completely wrong about hospital bed utilization, off from anywhere from a factor of 2 to 10, off on the factor of ventilators needed by a factor of 40. They overestimated it by 40 times. And now they're coming back and saying, well, okay, we're wrong, and now here's our new model, and so now we can craft new. Do you want to be governed by experts like that? Experts in air quotes? Are these people experts? Their models are garbage. They don't have any data. I mean, they don't even have tests. That's like saying, well, we're predicting global warming, except I don't have any thermometers at work. Absolutely insane. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
You know, it's worthwhile going back to the beginning of March when this happened in France. There's an article from the Mises Institute. A protest from France. Rule by experts is a grave error. And in this article, they begin by talking about a British economist, Edwin Cannon. After World War I, he was asked by somebody as a way of trying to shame him, well, what did you do in World War I? He said, I protested. That's probably the best approach you could have taken to World War I. I think I said it before. My family and I watched Sergeant York this last month, and I really love that. It's one of my favorite films. The first half of the film, where he's the conscientious objector, the Christian who protests the war, and his involvement in it. And then they give him a book. And he gets all caught up in the ideas of patriotism. He doesn't even question then why. His question's not to reason why. His question's to do and die, right? And yeah, it was a great act of heroism, but people need to ask why that war was being fought in the first place. That economist did. But he said, here in France where I live, we have President Macron announcing on Thursday, March 12th, that schools and universities will be shut down the following Monday. The only exception would be necessary activities. Medical services are necessary there. Evidently, not so much here. Energy production, also not necessary here. Security and food production and distribution, also not so. Well, security is, but not necessarily the food production here in the U.S. This policy response is apparently coordinated with other European governments. Italy, Germany, Spain applied essentially the same measures. Now, when he looks at this and he starts talking about what President Macron did, he breaks it down into three primary categories, the executive orders and so forth. And I want you to listen to this and ask yourself if this sounds similar. Because this is a global scheme. Everybody's taking the same measures. They're all watching what China did. They're all reacting in exactly the same way. They're all using the same justifications. It doesn't matter what country. And here in the U.S., even though it completely contradicts our Constitution that the president swore to, it doesn't matter here either. And so he says the first thing was the government was going to apply drastic measures to, quote, save lives because the country was, quote, at war with the COVID virus. Secondly, Macron insisted right at the very beginning that it was imperative to heed the advice of the experts, the people who know, you know, the two very smart people in the room here in the United States, Fauci and Birx. Got to listen to them. Got to listen to them, not the Constitution. You know, we had some wise people once upon a time in this country that were in government, and they actually wrote a document called the Constitution. By the way, we're going to be talking to Richard Proctor later in the program about that very document, that very important document. His third point was that this emergency situation had revealed how important it was to have a state-run system of public health care and just how lucky we are to have it. And so, without exception, these things have been done here in the United States. Now, we didn't have a public health care system, but we're getting it now. We're getting it now. Single control point where they will tell you what you can and cannot have, what you must have, whether you like it or not. And to show people that, yeah, you know, when the chips are down, you really need to have government providing you with income. You can't trust yourself. You can't have any independence. You can't have small and medium-sized businesses. You need to have the government. You need to have an essential job. Go to work for the government or get a paycheck from the government to stay home. I mean, that's the bottom line. And your health care needs to be provided by the government as well. So universal basic income, no meat, no flying, the whole Green New Deal, the Corona New Deal is what they've imposed on us. And it's kind of interesting, isn't it? That we had the Green New Deal and all those different aspects that were put into place. It was put there by globalists, by the UN. And we have the World Health Organization that is perhaps coordinating this in every single country. In the British Empire, the way they were able to run a global empire was to have local bureaucrats actually do the enforcement, so that you thought it was coming from them. You thought it was their idea. And it wasn't ruled by a foreign occupier. But it was ruled by a foreign occupier because they were making all the rules. And they were just pushing them out through native bureaucrats. So who's making these rules? The UN, the World Health Organization, Bill Gates, right? All these things are being are interlocking with each other. And then you have their local minions, their local bureaucrats like Fauci and Birx and the CDC. It's like, oh, well, you know, these are the people, these are American, and they've got our best interests. No, they don't. No, they don't. They're working for the empire. Representative Andy Biggs, writing in the Washington Examiner, talks about the Fauci-Birx doctrine of destruction. He did that 3 days ago. He said there's a big hoo-ha this week when the top health official, unelected, by the way, unelected. This is an elected official, Andy Biggs. But he talked about how the top health official, unelected, in Virginia seemed to say that Virginia would not reopen until a vaccine was developed and in use, which might take up to 2 years. Virginia Governor Northam has done and said so many outrageous things that the comment was believable. But as in the economic decline that is taking place so rapidly, all things come back to the dynamic duo of economic destruction, President Fauci and Vice President Birx. It is simply, that's my title for them. He doesn't call them president, vice president. I do. They're the ones in charge of the country. President, vice president, that's not really a title. Those are elected offices, so you know nobody voted for them. So I don't know. Dictator, vice dictator, whatever you want to call it. Expert and vice expert, how about that? They have relentlessly relied on admittedly spurious models to scare the nation into accepting unlawful, draconian government measures that do not make anyone safer while certainly taking a jackhammer to the foundation of our once prosperous national economy. Quite frankly, I think a better way to describe it is the way it was described in George Gilder's. They took a hammer and a sickle to our economy and to our Constitution, giving us pure Marxism. They advocate for shelter-in-place policies regardless of the physical, mental, or economic problems that arise from the Fauci-Birx doctrine. Calls to suicide hotlines grow exponentially as people see their jobs and their life savings evaporate. And actually, we've had doctors point out how the isolation, being cooped up without sunlight, without fresh air, has a physiological effect, not just the psychological issues. We trust you and grocery store workers to stay open, but not the furniture store or the hobby store. You can go to Walmart for food and prescriptions, if you can find them. But not to buy furniture or games. It's not okay to go to a barbershop or a salon unless you're the governor and you got to look good on TV. And oh, by the way, don't even think about going to church. I mean, I had people sending me screen notifications that they got back in early April, you know, before Easter. Coming from the New Mexico governor. A reminder, stay safe, especially do not go to church. That's what it is. Do not go to church. Single that out. That's what the Democrats have always been doing. Nothing suspicious about that, is there? Oh, and by the way, don't go to any protests either. Yeah. Don't go to church. You know, don't exercise your free exercise of religion, that part of the First Amendment. Don't protest and redress your grievances to the government. No, I can't do that either. Don't talk to each other on social media in the digital public square, because we're not going to let you get in the real public square, and we're not going to let you talk to each other on our government-controlled media. Yeah, that's right. It's not just Fauci and Birx, but it's also Facebook and Twitter and YouTube that are the little bureaucrats that are implementing the globalist plan. Oh, but it's just, they're just doing what they think is right. That's right. No, the solution isn't to watch government officials from around the world implement policies consistent with destruction. The remedy is to reopen. As of today, the Texas governor, Governor Abbott, a Republican actually, has said that restaurants may reopen, retailers may reopen, malls may reopen, movie theaters may reopen, but they can't have more than 25% capacity. Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for the privilege, Governor Abbott, of letting us reopen at 25% capacity. Has he ever run a business? No, he's a lawyer. We're going to talk about that today with Richard Proctor. You know, the original 13th Amendment was put in to make sure that you couldn't have lawyers in Congress. Or maybe governorship or a president. You got to have people who actually have real experience in the real world. 25% capacity, well, that's nice. And if you've got less than 5 confirmed cases of the virus, businesses can reopen at 50% of their normal capacity. Think about that. You're still going to cut them down by 50%? Even if they've got no cases, Governor Abbott? How pathetic is that? That's what passes for freedom. Yeah, he's one of the most freedom-loving governors we've got, unfortunately. This is why I say, Washington is gone. I think the state houses are gone. Don't waste your time protesting these people. Cut them off. Cut them off at the local level. Take all of that energy that you're using to go to protest at the state capitol there in Michigan and start creating your own enclaves of freedom in local communities. That's where you need to focus this. Stop begging these tyrants to take their boot off your throat. Come on, folks. Take it back yourself. In Arizona, the businesses say they're going to reopen today regardless of what the governor there decides. Governor Ducey is the governor there. And all of us are self-employed. We also have to take care of our families. Our bills have not stopped. Food still has to go into our children's mouths. Well, good luck finding it, because these authoritarian tyrants who've never run anything have the arrogance to suggest to people that they can micromanage everything. Do you really think they believe that? Are they that stupid? Maybe they are. They're pretty arrogant people. Pretty arrogant people. Maybe they really do think that they're so smart they can centrally run the economy, even though we've seen this fail everywhere. The other take on this is that Mao and Lenin and Trump and Abbott don't really have any intention of doing anything. They're not benevolent dictators. They're just dictators. And dictators like to consolidate their power. Either way, you should not let them tell you what to do. I am a cosmetologist. I know sanitation and I know infection control, said one of them. She already has Clorox wipes. She has extra masks waiting for customers. I want to work. My clients want to pay me for my work. I want to get back to normality. Oh, no, no, not without a vaccine, you're not. Because, see, as Governor Abbott is out there saying he's going to reopen today, you have the Democrats in Texas pushing the panic button along with the media. The media, The Hill, says Texas coronavirus deaths hit a one-day high ahead of the reopening. Look at this. This reckless governor who wants to let businesses open up at 25% of capacity. Oh, can't have that. We got trouble with a capital T. And that rhymes with C, and that stands for COVID. No, 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 we can't have that. Not here in this community, not in this state, we can't open up. There's somebody might get sick somewhere. And you know, you might get run over by a car if you walk to the store. As Texas ramps up its testing, there will be more positive cases, said Abbott's spokesman. The hospitalization rate has remained steady, and the fact remains that Texas has one of the lowest death rates per capita in the country, showing the success of our efforts. No, you didn't. This is the thing that bothers me. President Trump is out there declaring victory. Abbott is declaring victory. You didn't do anything. You shot us in the foot. Maybe you shot us in the head. We'll have to just wait and see how bad this is. You didn't do anything to control this. Trump is tweeting about this. What nonsense. But listen to the Democrat Party here in Texas. Today is a dark day in Texas. Abbott's decision to let Texas stay-at-home order expire is reckless, irresponsible, and puts all of us at risk. Well, then stay home, Democrats. Please, stay home. Under Abbott's reopening, as I point out, it's just going to be 25% capacity or maybe 50% capacity. President Trump is basically saying, see, it worked. I saved you. Remember 46 days ago? And I had Gerald Celente on as they were talking about doing this. Actually, probably more than 46 days ago. And I said it, and then I had Gerald on and he said it. They're going to take credit for this when it turns out to be it's nothing. And when everybody realizes it's nothing, they're not going to say we made a mistake. They're going to say we saved you. And that's exactly what they're saying now. You hear that from Abbott? You hear it from Trump. Trump tweets out, despite reports to the contrary, Sweden is now paying heavily for its decision not to lock down. As of today, 2,400 people have died there, a much higher number than in neighboring countries of Norway, 207 and so forth. Denmark, 443. The U.S. made the correct decision. No, you didn't, President Trump. Not at all. You did what Fauci and Birx told you to do to the letter. And what they told you to do was wrong. I can refute that. I don't need a tweet. I don't even need 128 characters. I think it's now 256 or what. I don't even need that. I can refute that in seven characters. Two words. New York. New York. As I pointed out yesterday, New York has more than 50% of the COVID deaths. Let's just go with the definition from CDC of the COVID death. You know, people that you haven't even tested. You have no idea if they died even with COVID, let alone from COVID. You haven't tested them at all, but let's just say that's the COVID death. Nobody's dying from heart disease anymore. Nobody's dying from cancer anymore. Nobody's dying from pneumonia or flu. Everybody's dying from COVID. It's the number one cause of death in the U.S., they said. All right, well, let's just go with their figures, however. More than 50% of the people who died in New York. Now, if you look at the number of deaths per 100,000 people with this, it's 50 times the number of people who died in Texas. Now, Texas didn't close down for a long time at all. You had New York close down right away. It was California first, and the next day you had New York close down, and they were the first ones to do it. Close down the entire state. Did it matter? No, it didn't. President Trump, didn't matter. They still had more people die than the rest of the country combined in New York, even though they shut down the entire state right at the very beginning. Their death per 100,000 people is 100 times more than South Dakota, where everybody has railed about the governor there not shutting down everything, although she took some measures. And when you look at Georgia, that President Trump railed about after he first said, oh, it's a good thing for them to open up, because my voters like that. And then Fauci and Birx told him, no, no, no. He says, oh, no, it's a bad thing. You shouldn't do that. It's really risky. I can't stop you, but you shouldn't do that. Well, in New York, they had 114 people per 100,000 die. In Georgia, they had 8.6. 13 times more people died in New York than in Georgia. So whether they do it totally with draconian measures like they did in New York, whether they do it early like they did in New York, it didn't make any difference, President Trump. So even from a pragmatic standpoint, that policy is an absolute fail because it didn't change anything. Actually, you know, the places where the early and draconian shutdowns were the worst place in the country. And yet, what has happened to our meat supply? Maybe President Trump doesn't know. Does he go grocery shopping? No, he lives a catered existence, just like George H.W. Bush. Remember that time he went into the grocery store and what is that? Back in the early 90s, he'd never seen a scanner. These people are so isolated from reality, maybe even worse than a lawyer. Definitely worse than a lawyer. Try to find some meat, President Trump. If you ever went into a store, you might see the shelves are half empty now. Why would that be? See, from a pragmatic standpoint, it doesn't work. But pragmatism, when that becomes your only policy, it turns into totalitarianism. Because, see, principle is the thing that we've really killed here in this country. Liberty, the Constitution, that's never a consideration. Never a consideration. And so that is really what's laying dead on the ground. Folks, we've got to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. Take a look at the products we have at InfoWarsStore.com. You don't have to go to the grocery store. You can still place your order, get storable food. We also have several other products that are now in stock and on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. We have a power stack. We have that on 60% off. Products in the morning, AM and PM products in the morning to wake you up. Products in the evening to help you relax. But both the AM and PM have products that are going to support your body and your immune system. Vital nutrients. InfoWarsStore.com. Looks like NASCAR is going to return to racing on May 17th at Darlington Raceway. Yesterday, I took some time to watch the 1958 Daytona Road Race. That was before they had the Daytona 500. They used to do the road race down Daytona Beach. I grew up in Florida, in Tampa, and we used to go to Daytona quite often. It was a lot of fun to drive down the beach. And they used to have a road race in the early days. They started in 1926, maybe a little bit earlier. I know 1926 is when they set a speed record on Daytona Beach. The guy went 211 miles per hour. I can't even imagine with the cars the way they were in 1926 that somebody have the guts or the ability to drive that fast on a beach with the kinds of tires and suspension systems they had back then. But that was when America was a free country. You know, when I talked to Gerald Celente, last time I talked to him, in between the commercial break, I got on a conference call with him, asked him how he was doing personally. And he said, I'm just sad. Just sad to see what's happened to this country. I feel the same way. Because I'd been to Daytona Beach so much, and in the 60s and 70s, we're able to ride up and down the beach. Went a couple of years ago with my wife. And you can't drive up and down the beach anymore. Most of the areas are off limits to cars. You have to pay to even get into the restricted areas. No thanks. And to walk alongside the beach and take a look at it, it was completely abandoned. And it was just so sad to see that. And now I see that kind of restriction and lockdown, because that's what this is really about. This is not about the COVID virus at all. This is about the same types of policies that they've been gradually locking us down with being applied. That's just an excuse. And when I looked at it, vacant, empty, no life on the beach, no cars, nothing. And now that's the way the cities look. And it is a sad thing. And so I just wanted to just took some time with the family and said, hey, I want to see this. I want to see what the road race looked like. I want to see what Daytona Beach used to look like. This is the way it was when I grew up in Florida. And so they had, it was kind of interesting what they did. Nothing at all like what NASCAR has become. You know, NASCAR came out of Daytona Beach. They had one of the guys who was involved in the early road races, Bill France, incorporated NASCAR. But it's highly associated now, really, you know, with North Carolina and so forth. But also the Daytona 500 has become a big thing. And they've got a gigantic stadium now, banked turns and all that sort of thing. But in 1958, what they had was a race course that was only about 4 miles long, and it had one straightaway that was right on the beach, and it had another straightaway that was on A1A, a road. It was just two lanes at that time. And then the two turns were also beach, but they weren't compacted sand. They were kind of soft sand. And so these guys would, you know, take it down 80 or 90 miles an hour with these 1958 cars, and they were stock. They could adjust the suspension and stuff, but they could only use OEM parts, the things that were coming from the manufacturer, and they couldn't touch the engine. So they would rail it down the dirt. There's a picture of some of that. That's on the road part of it. They go down the beach, and then they would hit those turns, and it would be soft sand. And even when they're going down the beach, the guy who was talking about the course said, you know, it's just kind of, you know, fishtailing all over the place because it was not a solid surface like a road surface. And then they would hit the soft sand, and then they would get on the main road, and it's like, all right, they were taking it there up to about 130 miles an hour. But the road was pretty bumpy, and he said, we get points where we get all four tires come off about 6 inches. That was real racing. That was really cool to watch that. No banked turns. And you know what? When it was finished, the people that on the sidelines, like the European rally races and everything, they just got in their cars and drove right on the beach where the race had been. Yeah, it's nice to go back and see America. We had freedom.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, The David Knight Show.
Yeah, when we were free. Do you remember that? Yeah, I can remember that. Not too much left of that anymore. As a matter of fact, going back to North Carolina, in Raleigh, North Carolina, you had, this has been happening on a regular basis, people protesting, saying they want their freedom. And I want to show you this clip that was put together by Gary Franchi and his comments. It's absolutely outrageous what is happening in North Carolina. As these people are there protesting the lockdown, And again, it's the places where it's bad are the places where they have done the most draconian measures and took them on the earliest. In New York, they have more than all of the rest of the country combined. And almost all of it is right there in New York City. But that's okay. They're going to actually clean the subway for one evening. That place is a filth hole. Thomas Jefferson understood. He never saw anything the likes of New York City. Can you imagine what Thomas Jefferson would have said about New York City and about de Blasio? Yeah, de Blasio wouldn't have lasted 5 seconds in 1776, let me tell you. Jefferson said big cities are a threat to the health, the wealth, and the liberty of man. And boy, has that ever been proven now in New York City. But let's take a look at what's going on in North Carolina, where they don't have a pandemic. They don't even have an epidemic, but they are locked down nevertheless, because this isn't about a health issue. This is about a liberty issue. Video clip number 4.
Clearly, it is a sign that freedoms are dissolving faster than expected. Now, I was informed that officers in Raleigh were instructed to ask the protesters if they were infected with CV. If they invoked their right to remain silent by not answering, they were arrested on sight as they peacefully assembled.
Cops have masks on. They're putting on. They pushed a woman down, middle-aged woman down on the trunk of her car, of their car, putting plastic tie wraps on her hands like handcuffs, taking them off. Why? Because she wouldn't answer if she had COVID-19. Who knows? You don't have any tests, right? You got the governor of Maryland saying he's going to use, or she is going to use, the National Guard to keep the federal government from confiscating tests that they need. Even the federal government doesn't have it. For the senators, for the congressmen. That's why Congress is afraid of this. I've been listening to CNN, Fox News. They're afraid to go back into Congress because they don't have tests. So they're going to ask you, do you have a test? They're not saying anything. So they arrest them and haul them off. You know, look at this. Absolutely amazing. Now, tyranny doesn't really change, does it? Doesn't history repeat itself? Yeah, they don't have brown shirts. They got blue shirts. See, it's not exactly a repetition. But it does rhyme, doesn't it? Absolutely amazing. All right. In California, Governor Newsom is upset. You know, all those beaches are open, those state parks are open, and he's going to close them now. I tried to let you people have a little bit of freedom, but look at that. You abused it. Now, what is Abbott going to do if more people show up to a restaurant or whatever? Tonight, I'm going to take my wife out, try to go to a restaurant. If anybody wants my business, they're not going to turn me away. If they got empty seats there and they're turning me away, I won't be going back. I won't be waiting. I don't mind waiting if they're busy. But if you're going to play this game, you'll do it without my money. And so Gavin Newsom, after we saw the clips last week, you know, we had those important blue shirts on their high horses, literally on their high horses. Going around to the beach, you got people all over the place. There's a couple, 93 years old, sitting in beach chairs. And they said, you're going to have to leave. Single them out. Because you set up something that is more permanent. You know, a chair on the beach is more permanent than a beach blanket that you're sitting on. So you can't sit there that long. Not going to allow that. This is the arbitrary tyranny that is rolling out. And so after that, you know, you got all these people out there on the beach getting vitamin D, sunshine, and fresh air. You can't have that. Come on. You know, we've got to have a pandemic scam going on here. So he's going to shut down the beaches. The way Babylon Bee put it, California establishes an official fun police. In conjunction with Gavin Newsom's stay-at-home order, the state of California will be unleashing a new state law enforcement agency tasked with carrying out the spirit of the order, that no one anywhere can even think of doing anything remotely fun at all. And they have to remain inside, locked in their homes, feeling bored and sad. Yeah, I do feel sad about this. The new agency is being called Law Advocates for Merriment Enforcement, or LAME for short. we can laugh about this, folks, but this is really no laughing matter, quite frankly. And take a look at this report from Project Veritas. He's gone through, because we're talking about everybody's dying, right? Everybody's dying. And you know, continue to see these stories being put out by The Sun and so forth. Drudge has this one up. World on a knife edge as the coronavirus cases spike and cities shut down again after the lockdowns are lifted. See, I told you. Told you weeks ago that's going to happen. Well, we might reduce these restrictions a little bit, but, you know, it's just going to kill people. And already you got the Democrats all over Abbott. He's going to kill people. You have The Atlantic saying that the governor of Georgia is running an experiment of human sacrifice by reopening the government there. I mean, this is full-on insanity. It is psychological warfare. It is gaslighting. I explained to you yesterday how the British government's 77th Brigade, which is a psychological war brigade, they said, we've got 3,000 or 4,000 people who have been working on this on social media to push this. Keep everybody locked down and safe. We want to keep people safe. And so we've got our people out there pushing this on social media. And we got another 20,000 people that we can bring in if we need it. Social media has always been about psychological warfare. DARPA created the internet for psychological warfare, and they don't want you anywhere talking to anybody doing anything unless it's through their control system of the internet. And that's one of the reasons why 5G is so important to them. People are going to say, well, you know, if I can work from home, if I've got 5G, bring it on. I don't care about any health or privacy considerations whatsoever. Just bring it on. Well, let's take a look at the lies about the COVID deaths. We don't have time to play this full report. We'll play some of it. Video clip number three. This is Project Veritas.
To me, all you're doing is you're padding statistics. You know, you're putting people on that have COVID-19. If they didn't have it, you're making the death rate for New York City a lot higher than it should be.
So these are funeral directors.
All of the death certificates, they're writing COVID on all of the death certificates, whether they had a positive test, whether they didn't. So I think, you know, again, this is my personal opinion. I think, like, the mayor in our city, they're looking for federal funding, and the more they put COVID on a death certificate, the more they can ask for federal funds. So I think it's political.
These are funeral directors in Brooklyn, Staten Island.
One autopsy because it was furious. And I don't know who this Supreme Court justice is, but the Supreme Court justice was related to this family. And he says, I know my sister didn't die of COVID-19. She said she had Alzheimer's and they didn't suction her. You have to suction because they forget how to swallow. And right away they put down COVID-19 on her. They, death certificate, and the Supreme Court justice, whoever it is, contacted the hospital. They did an independent autopsy. Bingo, no COVID-19.
We know there are many unanswered questions during this pandemic. We've been out in the street talking to some folks who are on the front lines, talking to the unsung heroes of the people of New York City, people, for example, in funeral homes. And we've talked to these unsung heroes, and we've discovered some troubling things, some things that should disturb us. This will just be part one of an ongoing investigation into fraud, waste, abuse, corruption, and COVID.
All right, we're going to have some more of that when we come back. You heard that? They had Alzheimer's. They forget how to swallow, so you got to suction them. They didn't suction them. Said it was COVID-19. The family, who allegedly had a Supreme Court justice, said, no, we want an autopsy. No, no COVID-19 at all. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're just playing the new report from Project Veritas. James O'Keefe began by some comments from a lot of funeral directors there in and around New York City, because that is the epicenter of what is happening in the country. New York State has more than the rest of the country combined, even though they locked down early and locked down hard. And most of those cases are right there in New York City. And so the Staten Island funeral director, Brooklyn funeral director, many others are talking about cases that they know about, questioning whether or not these people even have COVID-19 when they're dying. And one individual that you just heard there say it was a family. It was a justice of the Supreme Court, wouldn't say which one, it was related to them. They wanted to have an autopsy because they believed that it was negligence on the part of the rest home that this individual was in. Said the individual had Alzheimer's. You forget how to swallow, so you have to be suctioned to get the saliva out. They choked on their own saliva and said, oh, it's COVID-19. And so they demanded an autopsy. They demanded a test and found out that the deceased relative did not have COVID-19. And one of the individuals there, the director of Brooklyn's Schaefer Funeral Home, said 2 weeks ago, I had a 40-year-old man that died in his house, okay? They didn't even go to the house. The guy had no underlying causes, no medical conditions. So they released him from the house without even saying that he had COVID-19. They said he had a fever. They said, you know what? He said, how do you know what he had? You don't. They didn't even go to the house. They didn't test him. They didn't go to the house. He had not been under the care of a doctor. He says, you don't have a private doctor? You weren't under any medical care, but they're automatically going to put you down on the death certificate. It's COVID-19 because they're putting down everything that way. They're padding the numbers. And, of course, in the hospitals, there's an incentive, a financial incentive, to let people get sicker so they can put them on an invasive ventilator. They get more money that way. They get money if they diagnose somebody with a COVID-19 patient, and they get even more money if they put them on a ventilator. They can make enough money with just one patient to not only pay for the ventilator but to have a profit and then to continue to treat them. I want to go back and play some more of that Project Veritas. We've got about another minute of that report. Let's continue that.
To be honest with you, all of the death certificates they write in COVID on all of the death certificates, whether they had a positive test, whether they didn't. So I think, you know, again, this is my personal opinion. I think, like, the mayor in our city, they're looking for federal funding, and the more they put COVID on a death certificate, the more they can ask for federal funds. So I think it's political. So I'm going to turn around and say, you know, like, not everybody that we have here that has COVID on a death certificate died of COVID. Can I prove that? No, but that is my suspicion.
So you think that they're just putting it on everyone who's dying?
They're putting it on everybody's death certificate to make life easier for them, because, like, the causes of death get proved right away. If you write COVID, I mean, listen, they're just pushing things out because they're overwhelmed, and it's just easier to write COVID on everything. That's my opinion.
So this isn't, like, we're not the first case of this happening?
Oh, absolutely not.
How often do you think this has happened?
Quite a lot.
So you've seen, like...
I couldn't give you a number, but quite a lot.
Okay. So you've seen other families at your funeral home?
Absolutely. I've seen causes. I've seen people, you know, take COVID in families that somebody never tested. We don't know, and they're writing it anyway. Because if, you know what, the law allows them, like, if it's in their medical opinion, it allows them to write it. So they don't even have to prove it.
So do you think that they're doing it to help the mayor, or...?
I think they're doing it to help the mayor. I think the mayor is ordering it from down, because the more deaths that they report from COVID, the more money they can go and ask the federal government for.
That's right. As we pointed out before, we've had a lot of people speaking out and saying, look, when we put down the underlying cause of death, we don't typically know. We don't typically do an autopsy unless they're concerned about foul play or something. Or, as I just mentioned, maybe relatives are concerned that there was negligence in a rest home. So we don't typically even investigate that. As we went on to say, they're not going out to houses anymore. They would go out to the houses and investigate the scene, but now, and they would say, well, he had heart disease or whatever. He died of natural causes because he was in his 80s, and life expectancy in the U.S. is 79.5 or 78.5, I think. And if you look at the ages of the people who have been diagnosed with COVID-19, about 40% of them are over life expectancy. We didn't expect this. This is novel. No, it's not novel. As we look at what is happening, though, the immediate payoff that people are getting for playing this game of trying to pad the pandemic, that's the game. Pad the pandemic. And as soon as freedom pops up, you do the whack-a-mole thing. You know, so somebody reopens, whack them down. Oh, nope. We just did some tests, and look at this. We had people, they didn't even know they had it. But we tested them, and the test says that they've had it. So they got to whack that mole and knock them down again. Los Angeles Times, the anti-vaccine, anti-lockdown movements are converging and refusing to be quote-unquote enslaved. Yeah, they stumbled on it. They push this back and say, oh, those anti-vaxxers, they've always been wrong. And they've always said that this is a liberty issue. And now they're joining up with those radical people who are having their lives and jobs destroyed who actually want to have a future. And they're saying this is all about enslavement. Can you imagine that? While most of the world hungers for a vaccine, this is LA Times, the world is hungering for a vaccine. And you know, quite frankly, they have been so gaslighted by Fox and CNN that they are starting to say, well, where's my vaccine? I mean, I'm sure the elites have got it. They're probably just keeping the good stuff for themselves. Yeah. Well, most of the world hungers for a vaccine to put an end to the death and the economic destruction of COVID-19. Some anti-vaccine groups are joining with anti-lockdown demonstrators to challenge restrictions aimed at protecting public health. Come on, guys, who are you radical idiots? We're just trying to keep you safe and healthy. Vaccine critics suffered a serious setback last year as states strengthened immunization laws in response to measles outbreaks sparked by vaccine refusers. Nobody died. Yeah, as I point out, about 650 people were quarantined in L.A. Well, that proves that you had an epidemic, right? No. No, it wasn't an epidemic. Nobody was hurt. Nobody died. Don't even know if all those people even had measles. They were quarantined because they said, look at this. Somebody with measles came in, and they went through the L.A. airport. So locked down everybody that they were close to. See, that's why they want to get your cell phones. That's why Apple is working with Google to track you with geospatial intelligence, which, by the way, they've been working on for over 20 years. You think this is something new? No, the justification is new. This is a decades-old plan. It is a plandemic. And so, as the LA Times puts it, the vaccine critics suffered a setback, not because they're wrong, but because laws were put in to take away informed consent and religious freedom and every other individual liberty and due process that you have in this. So see, they had setbacks, serious setbacks, because we beat them with our laws. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the Trump administration is trying to accelerate this vaccine. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Without the freedom to offend, there is no free speech. It's the David Knight Show. And now, your host, David Knight.
All right, so as we look at the LA Times, they're saying, you know, you've got this, the anti-vaccine and the anti-lockdown movements are coming together because they refuse to be, quote-unquote, enslaved. Yeah, they're freedom movements. Well, they were fighting mandatory vaccination without informed consent. I mean, how do people in California call themselves pro-choice if they're going to force vaccines on people? But there is a group that really does support my body, my choice. And again, it really is your body. It is your body, and it is your family, and it is your doctor-patient relationship. You know, when it comes to an abortion, that baby that's being killed, half the time, it's a different sex. Much of the time, it is a different blood type. All of the time, it has different fingerprints and so forth. It's not your body. It's another body that you're killing, somebody else. But when it comes to vaccines, that really is your child, your doctor-patient relationship for you as an individual, and it really is your body, your choice. You got to get out of that. We got to stop having the federal government presume that it has the authority to tell us that we can't have certain medications, whether we're talking about medical marijuana or stem cells. You can't have that. No, you are going to get this vaccine from Gates, and we're going to accelerate it through the Trump administration. Or maybe I should call it the Fauci administration. Because President Trump seems to have abdicated his authority here and his power. He keeps giving the platform to this preening bureaucrat who can't get on television enough. I mean, he's already on television more than the president. Why does he need to put him in charge of the press conferences, right? A group calling itself Freedom Angels in California, whose members last year stood on chairs and chanted at public hearings about the California vaccine bill that made mandatory vaccination because of measles, a harmless childhood disease. Yes, yes, yes. You can find somebody somewhere, sometime, that died from it, from complications from it. It's still a harmless disease. You can die from anything, anything. That doesn't mean that you then ban that thing, whether it is a gun or a car or stairs or bathtubs or anything else, right? You can die from anything. You have to start, we have to start talking about risk. That's why I spend so much time on it. You know, when I do this in a live format, in a verbal format, it's not a report. I can't show the different stats and so forth. And it's difficult for people to understand, you know, the math, look at the numbers and so forth as I'm just reading them out to you. But you have to put these things in context. And the context is how many people died out of how many tens of millions? And how many other things kill people from that? I've talked about this from the very beginning. As the Freedom Angels co-founder said, this is the time for people to take notice and to really evaluate the freedoms that they're giving up in the name of perceived safety. Safety that never shows up, as I pointed out earlier. You know, President Trump, oh, look, we took the right course. Look, Sweden had 10 times the number of people die from COVID as Norway. So that shows that our lockdown was right. No, it doesn't. New York shows that the earlier they did it, the more draconian they did it, the less effect that it had. Because here in your own country, President Trump, New York had more than all the other states combined in terms of deaths. So it fails from a pragmatic standpoint, but it fails from a freedom standpoint. Just like, and I was concerned about this with President Trump from the very beginning, and I posed him even when he was running, and I said, look, you know, we don't know what Hillary Clinton is going to be like, but can President Trump be any worse than Hillary Clinton? You know, the same thing that Julian Assange said. You know that Hillary Clinton is corrupt. She's a criminal. She is a warmonger, anti-freedom and so forth. Because we don't know about Trump. Well, now Julian Assange is locked up and being killed by the Trump administration. And America is locked down and being killed by the Trump administration. When President Trump and his son Eric were going on and on about how wonderful and how pragmatic torture was, I said, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. Just listen to John Kiriakou, who worked with the CIA, the whistleblower, who blew the whistle on torture. They sent him to jail. They didn't do anything to the psychopathic freaks that worked for the CIA, that did the torture, and the people who oversaw it, and the people who covered it up, like Gina Haspel. No, she was promoted by President Trump. He was telling us, when he was running for office, he goes, well, you know, we got to have that. Yeah, we got a terrorist out there. You got to torture them for the information. Except that when they tortured the guy and they got him to confess to what they wanted, then they used that for the lie about weapons of mass destruction to lie us into yet another war in Iraq. That was the product of that torture. It fails on the pragmatic standpoint. Not only can you get anybody to say anything that you want them to say if you torture them, that's why people who are really honest with you, who don't have an anti-freedom bias and agenda, they'll tell you that. We don't want to do that because they'll tell us what we want them to tell us. Well, you know, they wanted that lie about the weapons of mass destruction. They used it to get their war. Now they're torturing the data. Fauci, the NIH, the CDC, they're torturing the data. And you can get the data to say anything you want when you torture it enough as well. And they're using that to start a war against the American people. And President Trump thinks that it's pragmatic. He trusts the experts on this. And the bottom line is that if you have a government that tortures people, if you have a government that enslaves people, that destroys our individual liberties, ignores the Constitution that they are under, that is a greater threat to us than any terrorist. It's a greater threat to us than any virus. Principles mean something. This country was founded on people who went to war for principles. because they understood where they led to. We don't understand that anymore. We think that, oh, we don't care about those principles. We don't care about liberty. We just want something that works. Well, guess what? Tyranny doesn't work. Lying doesn't work. Torturing doesn't work. Spying on people doesn't work. It's a hallmark of monsters in government. As Cheryl Chumley points out, Washington Times, Fauci has now set the stage for mandatory and lucrative vaccines. As she refers to him, Fauci, America's most listened to, she calls him a doctor and a medical professional. Now, he's the most listened to, quote unquote, expert, and put that in air quotes, on all the political, economic, cultural, social precautions that every man, woman, and child in the nation should take on the coronavirus. See, he's an authority, not just on medicine, but on economics, on politics, on everything. We should do everything that he has to say. And we have. And so now you can see that they've wrecked the energy supply. He's wrecked health care. He's wrecked the food supply. Well, he's just warned what cooler-headed watchers have suspected all along, that this country may never go back to normal. Never, that is, Fauci suggested, until a vaccine is developed. Never until a vaccine is developed that must then be included on the required list of shots for all children in order to attend school. And also, for each and every one of you adults who wants to get out of your house arrest, travel, go to work, any of that, you got to take the shot. What great news for Big Pharma, writes Cheryl Chumley. What great news for Bill Gates, who just announced his foundation is going to spend billions of dollars to help build factories for 7 possible coronavirus vaccine makers. She said, spend is probably the wrong word here. Investment is more like it. And as Del Bigtree pointed out, just look at the money this guy is going to make. He wants to vaccinate every person on the planet. You know, his foundation has funded Immunization Agenda 2030. Every person, everywhere, every age, not just school kids, every age. That's their motto. IA 2030. Look it up. Every person, everywhere, every age, vaccinated. You do that to everybody in the world, you mandate that they've got to buy your product, and then you get the government to give you complete immunity from any damage that you do to people. How is that for a business model? Yeah, that's Bill Gates' business model being enacted now. President Fauci just warned at a White House briefing, when we get back to normal, we'll go back to the point where we can function as a society. But if you want to get back to the pre-coronavirus, that might not ever happen in the sense that the threat is there. I believe that with the therapies are coming online, the fact I feel confident over a period of time we'll have a good vaccine. And we'll never have to get back to where we are right now. There you go. So when you get a good vaccine, that's it. He also said if it's back to normal means acting as if there's never a coronavirus problem. I don't think that's ever going to happen until we do have a situation where you can completely protect the population. Well, how do you do that? Well, both he and Gates are on the same page, surprisingly. Yeah, you have to have everybody vaccinated. That's the only way that we know for sure. And we can scare you to death and scare you back into your groundhog hole if we say, if we do a test and say, well, we find that you have it or have had it. And so go back. Go back until we vaccinate you. As Cheryl Chumley points out, this, as the dire, dark, deathly numbers that sent America into the coronavirus panic in the first place have just been revised downward. Washington Post reported, America's most influential coronavirus model just revised its estimates downward. The lack of widespread systematic testing in most countries is the main source of discrepancies in death rates internationally, reported the BBC. So as the Washington Post says, well, these people who are the most trusted, they've just revised their models again. You know, it was 2 million, 1 million, 200,000, 100,000, so forth. They've been continually going down. But, you know, if they go back up, are we going to panic again and shut everybody back down? Yeah, we will. And can we trust them with any of these models? Of course not, because we don't even have any tests. Like I said before, that's like climate change models where you don't even own any thermometers. So we'll just make up the temperature. As a matter of fact, they did. We know that. They had thermometers, but they made it up. They moved the thermometers onto airport tarmacs. And that's basically what they're doing with their phony numbers for COVID-19. They overestimate the COVID-19 deaths. They underestimate unemployment figures. They overestimate temperatures and so forth. When their models don't work, they write each other emails. That was what Climate Gate was about. Oh, we got to hide the decline. Our models aren't working. So as Cheryl Chumley points out, we're focused on fear. Instead, we should be focused on this, the money trail, the money and the power trail. The Global Vaccine Action Plan, she points out. The World Health Organization, UNICEF, and Fauci's organization. They're within the NIH, the part of the NIH that pushes vaccines, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. And, of course, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Their Global Vaccine Action Plan, the Gates Foundation reported in a press release. The collaboration follows the January 2010 call by Bill and Melinda Gates for the next 10 years to be, quote, the decade of vaccines. She said, the decade of vaccines? Well, it looks like it's here, doesn't it? From 2010 to 2020, they've been working on this. This is part of an agenda that they've been gradually rolling out. The measles is a part of it. Panicking everybody over measles, demanding mandatory vaccines, locking people out of schools if they don't have the vaccines and so forth. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? What Cheryl does not talk about is the immunization agenda 2030. That's the next decade where every person, everywhere, at every age has to take the shots. It was a year ago, April the 26th, 2019. Everybody was reporting on President Trump. Grab that clip, video clip number two. President Trump saying they got to get the shots, right? NBC News, Trump on the measles vaccine. They got to get the shot. Stat News, they got to get the shots. Trump, once a vaccine skeptic, changes his tune amid the measles outbreak. ABC News, Trump shifts position on vaccinations, urges parents to, quote, get the shot. You guys got the clip ready? Let's play that video clip number two.
They have to get the shot. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shot.
Yeah, it was so important, wasn't it? I mean, we were all dying. Why didn't they lock us down for measles? It was so important a year ago. No, it's just part of a gradual preparation. Psychological preparation, take away your choice, take away your freedom. They have to get the shots. At least 695 people, NBC reported. You know, this is, they backed him up. NBC News agreed with him. 695 people infected, according to the CDC, with measles. Now, nobody died. 300 students and employees at two Los Angeles universities were under quarantine after possible exposure to measles. Therefore, we have to pass laws to mandate that they have to get the shots. Trump's comments on Friday differed from his past remarks on vaccinations. At a 2015 Republican presidential candidate debate hosted by CNN, Trump said that he wanted to change the vaccination schedule for children. And they said, this is the editorialized, erroneously linking autism to vaccines. He had said at the time, autism has become an epidemic. I'm totally in favor of vaccines, but I want smaller doses over longer periods of time. In a March 2014 tweet, that was 2015, in a candidate debate. In a March 2014 tweet, Trump questioned why a child, quote, gets pumped with massive shots of many vaccines. He said, healthy young child goes to a doctor, gets pumped with massive shot of many vaccines, doesn't feel good, and changes. And then he puts in all uppercase, autism. Then he said, many such cases, he tweeted. And then they go on to say, well, the CDC has urged healthcare providers to assure patients that the vaccine is safe and effective. And so it looks like they have gotten their way now, doesn't it? And so this year, that was 2019, April 26, 2019. From why are we giving kids so many shots so early and saying autism to President Trump on vaccines on March 9th, 2010. And this is before the lockdown. But already they were hyping the coronavirus. And President Trump, as the New York Times pointed out, President Trump has been promising the imminent arrival of a vaccine to halt the spread of the coronavirus. As a private citizen and celebrity, Mr. Trump was disparaging childhood vaccination schedule. Now, as his federal health agencies tackle the rapidly morphing coronavirus epidemic, Trump has had to adjust his messaging. He is now all in on a vaccine, and the sooner the better, says the man who in 2015 said he didn't like, quote, the idea of injecting bad stuff into your body, unquote. Now he is saying they're going to have vaccines, I think, relatively soon. Now, again, this is not President Trump changing because he's been scared about the coronavirus. This is President Trump who changed a year ago because he was scared about measles. We didn't lock down every state in the union. We didn't lock down the entire world over measles. One of the reasons they didn't do that was because there's still many of us around who understood it was a childhood disease. We all got it as children. Our parents wanted us to get it as children so we would have lifetime immunity so that we could get it when we were children and it would lessen the chances of more serious reactions to this, because the older you are when you get it, the more serious it is. The problem is that it doesn't convey lasting immunity. And so they do it two times now. They're talking about doing it three times now. Nobody has immunity to measles. You don't have herd immunity to measles. This is why people are freaking out. And you're not going to get herd immunity with vaccines. Herd immunity is a concept that preceded vaccines. But now here's where it gets really dangerous. Not only is President Trump advocating vaccines, now President Trump is advocating acceleration of a new novel vaccine. Let's call it that. Why don't we call that? We call it the novel virus, but we're not going to call it a novel vaccine, are we? Oh, no. No. They're calling it, quote, Operation Warp Speed. That's the Trump administration's term for this. Operation Warp Speed, trying to cut the development of a vaccine to as little as 8 months. Reuters said Trump administration is going to speed vaccine development, just like Bill Gates always said, doing everything Bill Gates wanted. The Trump administration is planning to speed up the development of a coronavirus vaccine with a goal of having 100 million doses ready by the end of 2020, a senior administration official said on Wednesday, who declined to be publicly identified. Oh, I can tell you why he's declining to be publicly identified. Yeah, the fix is in, folks. Look, if you want to support your health, there's a lot of ways that you can do it. There's a lot of ways that you can support your natural immune system. Getting out in the sunlight, getting sun, but of course they want you to lock down. Well, get winter sun. Our vitamin D supplement, that's now back in stock. Also, Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. Make sure that your body has the right vitamins, minerals, nutrients to be able to withstand, to have your immune system working properly. Be in a healthy condition. We've now got Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine back and 50% off. InfoWarsStore.com.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. As President Trump changed, you had the New York Times and the Washington Post so happy that he has now been educated by the smart people in the room, Fauci, Burks, others. As the Washington Post put it in March of this year, as a private citizen and presidential candidate, Donald Trump was a proponent of vaccine skepticism. He ignored the scientific consensus on stuff like how vaccines don't cause autism. Ham-fisted propaganda. As president, he is now surrounded by experts on the subject. So now he understands. There we go. And so they said, well, this is a very baffling coronavirus vaccine event. Remember when they were talking about this? And this is back in March, and President Trump was pushing this to go faster and faster and faster, right? And now it is, it's called Operation Warp Speed. You guys got that clip from Spaceballs ready? I guess this is where we are right now. This is what's going to happen with the vaccine program. It's going into ludicrous speed. Go ahead, run it.
Prepare to attack.
Prepare to attack.
On the count of three. One, two.
late? What happened? Where are they?
I don't know. Inject.
Sir. They must have hypertext on that thing. And what do we got on this thing? A Cuisinart?
No, sir.
We'll find them. Catch them.
Yes, sir. Prepare ship for light speed.
No. Light speed is too slow.
Light speed too slow?
Yes. We're going to have to go right to ludicrous speed.
That's right. Ludicrous speed. That's what we need for the vaccine. Let's go ahead and cut that. And how long will that take to get a vaccine? He says, yeah, you won't have a vaccine. You'll have to have a vaccine that begins testing, as they were talking about this back in March. And so President Trump said, well, how long would that take? And the CEO of the vaccine company said, you're talking about within a year. Fauci then speaks up, well, a year to a year and a half. Now, Fauci, who's saying now 18 months or whatever, Fauci had rushed to market a swine flu vaccine back in 2009 in just 4 months. Nobody was hurt from swine flu, but people were hurt from that vaccine. But anyway, Fauci says a year to a year and a half. Trump then goes, Lenny's talking about 2 months, right? And then Schlieffer again says a little longer. Trump says a couple of months, right? I mean, I like the sound of a couple of months better. I must be honest with you. I like that sound better. And so then HHS Secretary Alex Azar says, well, when you say that June is going to be phase one initiation, right? Well, in June, it is not a completed vaccine. Well, they didn't even wait till June to initiate phase one testing, right? They started doing that in April. It's been a couple of weeks since they started injecting it into humans. And the Trump administration, in an effort to get into ludicrous mode, said we're going to skip all animal testing. Yes, now called Operation Warp Speed. Warp Speed. It's not fast enough. Got to get into the ludicrous. And so, as Politico points out, said, you know, this could backfire on us. We like vaccines. We like Bill Gates. But, you know, this could have some downsides on it, says Politico. They said the Trump administration has already allowed one vaccine maker to begin testing its coronavirus shots in people before completing standard safety testing in animals. That's basically what Bill Gates has been demanding with his simulations. Remember, I said at the very beginning of this, yeah, he had Event 201 and that he co-sponsored along with the Bloomberg School of Health or whatever at the Johns Hopkins, but it's Bloomberg sponsored that and Gates sponsored his foundation and they all sponsored the simulation. Event 201, they've been doing that every year, and every year they run this simulation for the benefit of training the bureaucrats and people who are now rolling all this stuff out in a system of fear. The people at the top know exactly what they're doing. They create a bunch of useful idiots, bureaucrats, who are doing this because they've now become true believers. Every year they would run these simulations, detailed simulations, news reports and so forth. The motto at the bottom of it was, look at this, everybody died because we weren't draconian enough and we didn't accelerate the vaccine. So now we got Operation Warp Speed, just what Gates ordered.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Operation Warp Speed. That's what the Trump administration is calling their program to rush to market hundreds of millions of units of vaccines that have not even been tested on animals. Yeah, they started human testing without doing any safety testing. You know, that used to be the motto when we had ethics in medicine. The motto, going back to the Greek philosopher Galen, was first do no harm. First do no harm. No. First come the profits now. We have to make sure that we've got the profits in place. And that's what Bill Gates has been telling everybody. Like, running all these simulations every year for the bureaucrats. And at the bottom line, you know, they tell her, well, look, you know, it got in here. I played the one that was about 5 years old. It wasn't Event 201. I said, look, they're doing this every year. And they said, it took out several people in the Supreme Court. It got into the White House, took out some people in there. It got into Congress. Everybody's dying. You got to do something about this. And what do you have to do? Well, draconian lockdowns was a prescription. And accelerating vaccine development. So here we are, Operation Warp Speed from President Trump. Trump has pledged to, quote, slash red tape like nobody's ever done before. Going to places that no president dared to go before. Violating the Constitution. Violating medical procedures for safety. Oh, but this is for your safety, right? We're going to destroy safe procedures for your safety. Just like we're going to destroy liberty for your safety. It's always for your safety and security that we destroy all your safety and security and liberty. Are they going to accelerate the development of the coronavirus vaccine? NIH infectious disease leader reports Politico. Anthony Fauci said it could take 12 to 18 months to make the vaccine available, but even that timetable could be overly ambitious. And public health officials typically take their time when they're vetting vaccines targeted at millions, but not this time. Now we're at Operation Warp Speed. Several examples of how fast-tracking vaccines can backfire. Well, we had the massive campaign, writes Politico, the massive campaign to vaccinate against the 1976 swine flu. It flopped when the disease turned out to be mild, but hundreds of people suffered a rare nerve disorder after vaccination. I have played for you the 60 Minutes report from Mike Wallace when news was not always completely in the pocket of big pharmaceutical companies. He actually called them out on the damage, called out the government for how it lied to people, said, yeah, look at this. We had this young soldier. He just dropped dead. Well, it turned out that he and four others had contracted a flu, and the other guys were allowed to stay in their bunks. He was put on a forced march. And he just collapsed from it. He already was severely sick with respiratory illness. The drill sergeant tried to resuscitate him with mouth-to-mouth resuscitation, was unable to, and the soldier died. And they made a big deal about it. They said, look at this. This is so dangerous. And they created this government propaganda program to vaccinate everybody. I mean, the reality is that the drill sergeant did not get sick. He didn't get sick. He gave the guy mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. I said, look at this. This is a novel coronavirus. It's a novel swine. A flu is a coronavirus. So this is a novel coronavirus, and we got to vaccinate the entire country, and we got to do it right away because this is so deadly that it killed a single soldier. Now he's a young, healthy guy, and he just died. Well, the other three soldiers, nothing happened to them. They were not put on a forced march, and they didn't die. Nothing happened to the drill sergeant. But this one individual that Mike Wallace was talking to said, well, I saw those news reports of how a young soldier had died. And I thought, what chance do I have? I'm a middle-aged woman. I don't get much exercise. I better get that swine flu. And it paralyzed her. Never got full control of her body after that. And then that's one example. Politico gives another example of something that happened under Fauci when Fauci rushed the vaccine to market. Yeah, that's from that clip. I played that report last week. A vaccine used in some European countries against the H1N1 flu in 2009 caused some people to develop the sleep disorder narcolepsy. And so Politico says, well, you know, people are going to say vaccines are dangerous. We better be careful about this. If we have something else, this could really set back our vaccination agenda. The anti-vaxxers could set back not only this vaccine, but all vaccines. Oh, you mean we might say that you want to make sure that your stuff is safe and also effective before you force it on people to get out of their homes? Yeah, we are going to be saying that. I said, in contrast to drugs, vaccines are only given to healthy people. Understand that, too. It's not going to cure you after you've got coronavirus. The whole idea of a vaccine is it's supposed to build up your immune system so that you can fight the vaccine. Well, you know, there's other ways that you can build up your immune system that are much safer. You know, you can make sure you got proper nutrition. You can make sure that one of the best ways you can build your immune system is with vitamin D. But, of course, they don't want people outside. That's one of the reasons why you have the flu viruses during the winter. People, not only is it cold, that's another factor, but it's sunlight, it's the cold, and it's not being able to manufacture vitamin D. So, yeah, you can supplement for that. You can supplement for vitamins and minerals. You can make sure you're getting proper nutrition. You can make sure you get exercise, fresh air, sunshine. But, no, let's keep people locked up and force them to get a vaccine to get out. The guy says, normally you only give vaccines to healthy people. We have to be enormously careful not to harm healthy people because it could really set us back with these anti-vaxxers. People could realize they're telling the truth. The normal development of a vaccine is a long, large, and defensive, said Michael Watson, who's developed vaccines for 25 years at Moderna. But, of course, now they're working on a vaccine at Fauci's NIH Infectious Diseases branch. He says all this changes when you're in a global pandemic. In other words, we don't have to worry about harming healthy people. We don't have to take our time and do testing. We don't have to be defensive about this. We got to go to Operation Warp Speed. And we're now in ludicrous mode. The FDA would have the legal authority to promise emergency authorization of the Moderna vaccine. And, of course, they've already been given legal immunity from any harm that they cause to people. But that would be unheard of for a vaccine designed for massive use. And they say, talking about this, we seem to be willing to rush a vaccine into clinical trials without extensive animal model or safety testing, said Paul Offit, a University of Pennsylvania immunologist who co-developed the rotavirus vaccine. That's what Del Bigtree was saying the other day. He said, look, Paul Offit and I are usually on the wrong side, on different sides of things. And now we're both on the same side. This guy who developed a vaccine for the rotavirus says, I don't think we want to do this. I don't think we're going to rush this into human trials without extensive animal testing. Well, they've already done it. He said people are so scared of coronavirus that even those who are young and healthy will be willing to take a relatively untested product, even though the wild type of virus is unlikely to kill them. Yeah, they'll be willing to mandate and punish people, even though the measles is unlikely to kill people. Let's play a little bit of video clip number 6. This is very concerning because not only President Trump saying you've got to get the shots, but I want you to hear some of this conference where they're talking about the vaccine. 6.
We've been collaborating with U.S. agencies like DARPA, NIH. We collaborated with Dr. Birx in HIV vaccines.
Hear that?
Many, many years ago.
NIH, CDC, DARPA. This is a guy that is coming up with a vaccine.
Capacity. By end of this year,
briefing the president at a big table.
1 million doses. But to scale by end of this year, but to scale beyond that, we need your help, Mr. President. We need to work with you and your agencies, BARDA and others, to help us scale our vaccine to manufacture in America to protect American public.
Help us make money, President Trump, without any testing of our medicine.
From America. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. You'll have our help.
You'll have our help.
Please.
Yeah, we got Operation Warp Speed. He goes on to say, you need test cases? Well, we can get some test cases. How about we go back to Seattle? Maybe we could force inject that guy that came up with the model that shut everything down. We'll be right back with Richard Proctor. Stay with us. Welcome back. Joining us now is Richard Proctor. We've talked to Richard frequently about the Constitution. He's written books on economics and the Constitution. Both of these are under severe duress now due to the lockdown, both economics, as we see massive shortages being created, jobs being lost by the tens of millions, the country being put into a full Marxist mode with the eradication of the middle class. And any upward mobility. He has written books on economics. He calls it Bathroom Economics. And that's his website, bathroomeconomics.com. But he also has a couple of excellent books on the Constitution. One for teaching children, Constitution, If You Can Keep It. And another one for adults. There's a detailed commentary on it, line by line, as well as historical context. And that is Saving the Constitution. So you can find those from Richard Proctor at bathroomeconomics.com. And he also has a new series about liberty and how it has evolved over a period of time. That is a massive work. So you can find all that at bathroomeconomics.com. But joining us now is Richard Proctor. Thank you for joining us, Richard.
Oh, I'm good to be here. Glad to be here joining with you guys again. It's a good thing.
Well, thank you. You are the man we need to talk to, because the Constitution has never been under more duress than it is right now, quite frankly. Not only the economics, but you've got people who are contacting you for information, don't you? Tell us some of the concerns of some of the people that have contacted you about their constitutional rights being eradicated as part of this so-called pandemic.
Well, this young lady wrote me. She said she'd been to the council, her local council of her city council. And she presented this information. This is against the Constitution and all the things that we've been talking about. And the council member says, well, that all applies if there's a pandemic, if there's not a pandemic. But if there's a pandemic, then it doesn't apply and we can do what we're doing. There's a provision for that. So I wrote to her back. I'm just going to don't back down. There's nothing in the Constitution that allows any government official to strip up our rights. If that provision actually existed, government and media could do it any time they wanted. Ask the council member to show you that provision that allows him to do that. And I went through things like that. These people need, she needs to know. So I said, there needs to be a trial by jury convicting someone of a crime before they can be penalized. And putting someone in their home under duress is penalized. Telling them who they can associate with is penalizing them. Therefore, they should have had a court with a jury to convict them, or else they are not guilty. And that's the Sixth and Seventh Amendments of the Constitution. Guys, we need to do that.
It is a penalty. You're absolutely right. It is a penalty. And if we accept this as a pattern, we basically have just given up our rights. You know, I've talked about this many times in the context of the Second Amendment, that they talk about shall not be infringed, because they understood that with the Second Amendment, because the Second Amendment gives political power to the people. Power comes out of the barrel of a gun, as Mao said. And so if you got that gun barrel, you have some political power. They will take it from you degree by degree with 1,000 cuts, just like your neighbor might encroach on your property with a fence. And if you leave it there for a period of time, they say, well, you know, the principle that we've established is that's now ours. And if we allow them to establish this arbitrary system of dictates by bureaucrats, and many of them even unelected officials, then we are not going to ever get these rights back.
That's right. Things like this never return. Government gets their hands on something, they never give it back. It's just like taxes. They get a tax, they're never going to not take it anymore. We must stand up to these things. I recommended that she go back to the city council and the mayor, show them the information I sent to her, and see, now, what do you think about that? Let's get some attention here.
You know, there's another article that's along the same lines. Something just happened out of Baltimore. A U.S. district judge, Judge Richard Bennett in Baltimore, ruled against a grassroots think tank, local community organizing group. They asked the judge to ground three surveillance planes. They've got surveillance planes, spy planes that they've used abroad in some of the wars, and now they're going to war with the American people. You know, as the founders warned us, the tools of foreign wars abroad will become instruments of tyranny at home. Anyway, they wanted to have these grounded, and the judge said the U.S. Supreme Court and the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit have long upheld the use of far more intrusive warrantless surveillance tactics than these aerial investigation research programs. Each sensor on these planes can surveil up to 32 square miles. And so they're going to be using that, they say, because they've got to stamp out a virus and this is war. What do you think about that, Richard?
I think it's just an excuse to take more control of us.
That's 32. Right.
Did you say 32 square miles at a time?
Yes. Yes. Each sensor.
Oh, my. And the planes, the cameras they have on planes can focus on anything they want to focus on.
That's right.
And they can take pictures of, they can take parts of it, blow it up, see who people, they can look and see if a person's bald or not from these things.
That's right.
I mean, and they're using these to destroy our rights, and we best not let them.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, the thermal imaging drones that were developed in China, they've now got some people of the American military industrial complex that are customizing it and enhancing it for us. But you've got drones that are going to be surveilling people, thermal cameras at the entrance to private businesses. And they say, well, that's fine, you know, because it's a private business and you don't have to go in there. And that's right, you don't have to.
Oh, dear.
I won't be going into places that do that. But they admit that first they say, well, it looks at anybody who's got a temperature of more than 100.4. And then they come back and say, well, we don't really actually measure the temperature. We just look at how much we assume they're higher than the preceding people. And so this is the way this is rolling out. But then you go to the next level of tyranny, which is that you've got this plane that's going to be up there all the time. It's going to be up 40 hours a week, and it's going to be looking at all of this detail all the time everywhere in the city. And they're excusing all of this surveillance, everything all the way down to the inside of your phone, based on a virus. And I think we've got tyranny that's going viral.
We absolutely do. And I'm not, are we even sure there is a virus? I mean, there is a disease. Are we sure it's even serious at all? At all?
And well, 90% of the people don't even know they've got it.
That's right. They don't even find out they've got it. And even those who know and are hospitalized, 99% go home? Okay.
Yeah.
What are we worried about here?
Yeah.
Folks, I've been asking people, what did you do? Oh, I go to a place, these guys have got masks, they've got barriers. I said, what did you do about the flu last year? Did you get a mask and a barrier? What about flu the year before? Did you do that? Well, why are you doing it now then?
That's
right. Yeah, I'm a big spokesman for these things. People look at me and they get mad.
Yeah. Do you have mandatory masks there where you are in Utah?
No.
Yeah,
no.
Well, they do around here. I haven't done that yet. But I guess I'm going to get pulled over by the police pretty soon, because we just had the Illinois governor saying you can't go out in a motorboat with more than two people in the motorboat at a time. So if you got family, you can take that. They don't have to be a family member, the other person in the boat with you. But if you got family of four, mom and dad go on the boat, they've got to leave the kids on the shore. And as the guy said, there's a lot more people on the shore than there are in the boat. I mean, none of this makes any sense, Richard. We'll talk more about the constitutional aspect of this when we come back. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Richard Proctor. Again, you can find his books and writings at bathroomeconomics.com. Welcome back. We're talking to Richard Proctor, bathroomeconomics.com. And we were just talking in the last segment about gradual erosion and eradication of our rights and liberties by a process of infringement. We're taking them a little bit at a time. But, you know, if you don't know what you've got, if you don't understand what the Constitution is, they can take it all at once. And we think about what is happening today with social media. And with videos, as we had all of our videos removed by YouTube and so forth, we can see that they can flush things down the memory hole very rapidly today, right? But you'd be surprised to know that this actually was done in the 19th century. Yeah, you don't need to have a computer to take away bits and pieces of your Constitution if you don't know what's in it. And so explaining that now is going to be Richard Proctor, with a very interesting story about the original 13th Amendment. Tell us about it, Richard.
Yes. In the 18 teens, I don't have the exact date. That wasn't in the article, the articles that I discovered on the subject. There was an amendment passed and ratified by the people and put in the Constitution, copied into the Constitution and printed and distributed, that said the 13th Amendment said no attorneys, judges can be members of Congress. Now, I think that's a good idea. Okay.
Yeah.
And anyway, so here we went along, and many, many states had that Constitution in their archives. We went along until the late 1860s. And then there was an amendment passed, the 14th Amendment, about slavery. The attorneys, I don't know, people in the background, the power behind the throne, elected to remove the 13th Amendment that had been there for 50 years and slide the one that was ratified as the 14th into the place of the 13th. So when you look at the 13th Amendment today, that should be the 14th, and the 13th should say no members of Congress, no members of attorneys or judges, that ilk of people can be members of Congress.
Wow,
and
that's
boy, wouldn't that be a boon.
Yeah, it would. Maybe we could get a movement started to put that back in. You know, it's kind of funny, too, because not only evidently the attorneys and the judges removed that amendment, but they've been trying to remove all of our other amendments ever since, haven't they?
They're trying to remove the Second Amendment, but at least they haven't tried to just do it surreptitiously under the table, just erase it and change all the others down to be the Bill of Rights would be 9 then, you see. Well, they're doing it anyway, even if they don't legally remove them or even not print them anymore, they're not or abiding by any of them anyway.
That's right. Well, because we don't know what they are, and we don't demand that they, you know, when they come in and they say, well, we have a judge on one side of the country that says you can't just arbitrarily declare somebody's business to be non-essential and shut down entire categories of businesses and say you can't do that. That's not constitutional. But then in another jurisdiction, a judge will say, no, you can do that. You can shut down anything you want. And so you just have this arbitrary judicial supremacy, which turns into a kind of tyranny. And now they've extended it. Maybe what we should do is we come back with another version of that 13th Amendment, Richard. We should include doctors as well. because people like Fauci and these other bureaucrats who basically, I don't know, it's a slur on doctors to call Fauci a doctor because he hasn't really practiced medicine. He's been a bureaucrat all of his life. As soon as he got his degree, he became a bureaucrat. But we ought to make sure that we rein in these people.
I've got a doctor. I think I'll go be a doctor. I don't know. I'll do surgery, all kinds of stuff. Yes, sir. Yeah. Bob. Oh, look at that. That's nice.
Yeah, the coronavirus trumps the Constitution. That's what they keep telling us. But there's a hashtag that says that. No, we're going to have the Constitution over the coronavirus.
Well, we should. The coronavirus. Come on, guys. It's there. It's a disease. It's been planted in our country. Did I say that right? Planted in our country? Yes, I think so. It's been planted in our country. It's manufactured. It's a synthetic deal. There's even information that says that the Obama administration sent $3.7 billion to the China lab to do this. There's information about the Knights getting involved. Not the Knights. Whew, I said that wrong.
Well, it's not even just the Obama administration. You know, 700,000 of that, you know, 3 million during the Obama administration, 700,000 during the Trump administration. But it was Fauci who was funding that. And it was the NIH that was continuing to fund research here in America on gain of function bioweapons, even when they were told not to. They don't even pay any attention to the orders of people within the administration. They do whatever they wish. Even when they're told by the Obama administration, don't do this, they still do it. They do it under the Trump administration as well, even though they're not supposed to.
That's right. It's been going on. It's simple things like the ban on bathrooms for schools that Obama put out. Trump came in and says, we're not going to do that anymore. Bingo. These guys decided they were going to do it. Schools still did it. And places still did it, even though he said, no, we're not going to do it anymore. No one pays any attention anymore to anything unless they like it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the economics aspect of this, because, I said when this was coming out and there was a lot of indication, you know, when we found out that, this is supposed to be coming out of this wet meat market. And yet, you know, right down the street, literally right next to it, was this bioweapon lab where you had a guy publishing on LinkedIn that that's exactly the research he's doing, bats and coronavirus, a chimera. And they were telling us, it came from bats and all this kind of stuff. So I thought, this might be an engineered bioweapon. We have to keep an eye on this. This could be very dangerous. But even then, I said, no matter how dangerous this thing is, we're going to really hamper ourselves to fight this if we shut down the economy like China did, like Italy was about to do at that point in time. I said, then we will have two problems. And now we do. And it looks like that second problem is actually the bigger problem, because now we're getting meat shortages. We've got farmers killing cattle. We've got millions of chickens being destroyed, produce fields being plowed under. And all along the lines, all the producers are shutting everything down. And so even if we open this back up, I mean, how are we going to get this back online?
Just take a meat, one chicken plant. They were talking about a chicken plant that went under, several million chickens they were going to destroy. It's in New Jersey, I believe.
That's right.
Now, and in that same article, it said that others had closed. Okay, now let's just assume that tomorrow they say, the ban's off, you can go ahead and do it again. People just think you can open those doors or those again. It takes months and months to get one of those things back in operation again.
That's right.
The supply lines have to be set up. All the machinery has to be clean and put together. A new machinery purchased. A big deal. We don't just turn these things on and off like a light switch.
And if you kill the cattle and you kill the chickens, what are you going to even process, right?
They don't come back. And we need to eat those things. We got to have food. There's 300 million of us got to have food. And if we start cutting our farmers out, we're in real trouble. We will starve to death in a country that could produce everything it needs just because the government decided to shut us down.
And you know, the funny thing about that is the economic aspect of it, the fact that they said we're going to shut down restaurants and other institutions. And then what that did was that went back and destroyed the farms because they didn't have any way to distribute their produce and they couldn't even give it away. So they wind up shutting it down. You got farmers to say, well, I'm not going to plant anymore until I figure out what the government's going to do. So the government's basically, with this imposition of prohibition and so forth, has shut down the supply chain in ways that I don't think any of us fully understand.
Oh, no. How long does it take to grow potatoes? I mean, it's several months. Here we've got potato farmers in Idaho destroying or giving away their potatoes because they can't do anything with them. And some are saying they're not going to replant. Guys, this is serious. We just walk along like zombies thinking everything will stay the same. It isn't going to. We've had all these people out of work for so long. Oh, we sent them a little $1,200. Oh, that's really nice, $1,200. We've got millions that are delinquent on their home mortgages. What's going to happen when that begins to crunch us?
That's right. And we've had this problem has already been baked into the economy even before the shutdowns with the actions of the Federal Reserve. We've got to take a break. We'll be back with one more segment. Richard Proctor, stay with us. BathroomEconomics.com. Welcome back. We're going to talk to Richard Proctor about the banking aspect of this. It's not just the supply lines that are being taken down, but there are some fundamental issues. And folks, we have been fortunate to have the world's reserve currency in America for longer than anybody alive can remember. And if you really want to see a disruption in our standard of living and our lifestyle and everything in society, just watch what happens when our currency collapses, and we are right at the cusp of this happening because we've ignored the Constitution. So we want to get to Richard Proctor, see what he has to say about that and about the growing distrust around the world, not just in the U.S., but around the world and even their own currency. We see community money, as I've reported the last couple of days, in Italy and the U.K. People are not confident about their own currency or the euro or the dollar. So we'll talk about what's going on with that in just a moment. Before we do, real quickly, I just want to remind you about the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We now have Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. It's a fan favorite. It's been out of stock, but we now have it back in stock. And while in stock, we have it at 50% off. Take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. Also, we have a new product, Embrix Essentials Hand Sanitizer. Now, this is available in three different scents, lavender, eucalyptus, and peppermint. And you can save 50% off if you try all three of those. And it's not a gel. It's a spray. So it's not as messy as a gel. While you're in jail, you don't have to put a gel on your hands. You can get this spray, this affordable hand sanitizer, natural, portable. And you can get 50% off if you try all three of the different scents. And finally, we are now taking orders on storable food again at InfoWarsStore.com. Richard, before we get into the money, you said that you had a way that you could send people information about this missing 13th Amendment. If they're interested, tell us how they can find out about that.
Sure. If anyone wants information about what I just talked about, the 13th Amendment, I have it available. My email address is provis@solmega.com. That's provis@sulmega.com. Just send and ask for it. I'll send you the articles. You can read them for yourself. and check them out for yourself at a later date if you want to.
All right. And we'll try to put that in the show notes as well. Yes. We'll go back and get that because it's kind of a complicated email. We'll try to decipher that and put that in the description there. But let's talk a little bit about the money, because we've had, you know, going back to last fall, we had the Federal Reserve pump like $7 trillion into an obscure market that nobody ever heard of, the repo market. And the bubble has been building since we had the Great Recession. And this is a common problem around the world. People are concerned about that, so they're creating a community currency to try to get through that. But we've left the whole idea of hard money, money that actually has something behind it, which was fundamental to the Constitution. And why did the founders put that in the Constitution?
To coining the money?
They'd had experience with it, hadn't they?
Yeah, paragraph 5. I think it's paragraph 5, section 8, article 1. That particular item is a way to keep your economy under control. Now, how do I mean by under control? If everybody prints the money they want, then let's say that Denver prints money and they have it all out through Colorado, and people in Kansas, they won't take it. Now, what are you going to do? How will the people in Denver sell anything to the people in Kansas? It almost goes back to bartering. So when you put together a country and you have a constitution, you have rules. And one of the rules was that the government will take care of coining the money. And that's the federal government will take care of coining the money. And that's a good plan. And it only took 18 months for them to violate that. Oh, at most 2 years by having the first central bank do it instead of the Congress. And we started that back in 1791. And then we tried that again in 1816. And then because there were rules on the chart, they had charter, they only had dates, only 20 years. They did one in 1913 with no closing date. And we're suffering from that all the time. We're suffering so bad. And it's all this Federal Reserve thing. They control the money. We don't. Now they're talking about bringing it into the Treasury so we can control the Federal Reserve. I think that'll be the other way around. They'll bring us into the Federal Reserve.
Yeah, they've been, as Catherine Austin Fitz described it, she said, you know, the Treasury and the Federal Reserve have been kind of two faces of the same coin for quite a while. I mean, they've been kind of linked. And there's other linkages as well. I mean, you know, since we had took ourselves off of the gold standard completely under President Kissinger and Vice President Nixon, and we created the petrodollar with the Saudis, you know, we've had the Saudis basically having a say-so about our currency as well, in a sense.
Everybody does. We don't have it anymore control because of the central bank system, World Bank, International Monetary Fund. We don't have any control over our money any longer. Now, I believe that it was Kennedy was going to do that, and he got, you know, taken out. And I think it was Lincoln tried to do that, too, and he got taken out.
That's right. And before that, you had Andrew Jackson, who said, well, I'm going to kill the banker. It's going to kill me or whatever. And there was an assassination attempt on him, right? But the gun didn't fire.
They tried to get rid of him, too. Oh, yes. But he was successful in getting rid of the charter of the second Federal Reserve. They didn't call it that. They said that they call it the Second National Bank. But it was a central bank, just the same as the Federal Reserve is. Banking is a big problem for our country. We are losing our wealth through the banking system just as fast as it can be done. We're losing our wealth through inflationary tax. I heard the term inflationary tax. An inflationary tax is when the government prints money. And if they print $7 trillion and our money supply stands at $10 trillion, I don't know that it does, but let's just say that. The last information I had said it stood at about $10 trillion. $10 trillion. If you add $7 trillion to that, then your money becomes less worth by about 70%. So
that's
what
right.
You can buy today for $1, you'll now pay $1.70 for. And that'll be the base from then on because it won't go away.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to head into some kind of hyperinflation like we've seen in the Weimar Republic and in Zimbabwe and other places in history?
If we do something like $7 trillion very many times, yes, we will.
Yeah,
we will see.
And it looks like that's in the cards now because, you know, they went through and they passed that $2.5 trillion bill. And that was going to help all the middle class companies and so forth and small businesses. And they redefined that. And then they allowed Wall Street companies to come in and grab money. And pretty soon it was all gone. And so they said, well, we need to do another one and another one. And I think they're on number 4 now. And kind of like what we saw with the creation of the Federal Reserve itself, you know, it was done when they didn't have a quorum, when people had gone home for the Christmas holidays. They've been doing this. It's why Thomas Massie tried to stop this and drew down the wrath of President Trump on Twitter. He said, we can't have a vote on this without anybody showing up. We don't even have a quorum. And they don't want to do a voice vote. They just want to just run this through without anybody voting on it.
Yes, that's what they tried, and then they came down hard on him. He didn't.
Yeah.
They did it anyway, almost unanimously. They did it anyway.
Right.
I mean, what are we're talking about here? This is horrid government, and we're letting them do it. We the people are letting them do it. We're not
that's
holding
right.
their feet to the fire. We're saying, oh boy, send me $1,200. I'll be tickled to death. Oh my, yes, send it to me, please. And they're going to do it again and again and again. And then where will we be?
It'll at least solve our toilet paper problem, won't it?
Oh yes, it will. There'll be plenty of that. Yeah, that's why you save your Confederate dollars. Some of them didn't save them; they used them. No, I shouldn't say that was naughty.
Yeah, or your Continentals, right? I mean, that was the thing. That's what's so surprising. Too. You know, these guys that they had the experience of a worthless paper currency. The Continental Congress had put out, and so they put that in there. We got to have it back it with gold and silver and so forth, and then immediately they get rid of that. Why? Because they create a central bank, and central banks don't like to have any kind of honest money.
Oh, that's right. Well, what happened? You know, right after the Revolutionary War, the soldiers went home with scrips, money from the federal government, but nobody would take it, so they didn't have it. I mean, that's how you do that kind of thing. That's how you destroy good money, by just printing more and more and more. So every day that they print more makes your money worth less, even if you've got it in your pocket or in a hole in the backyard. Your money is then worth less immediately. An inflation tax is really a good term. An inflation tax means that whenever they do something, they've taxed, whenever they raise or print money, they have taxed your current money to the amount that they printed. And that's, guys, we're destroying ourselves, committing
that's
national
right.
suicide.
You punish
suicide.
The people who are responsible, the people who save, they lose everything. The people who are speculators, they are the ones who come out on top. And we've seen this movie so many times in so many countries, and even in our own country, it's a shame to see us going down this road at pedal to the metal, I think is what we're doing. Thank you so much, Richard Proctor. Again, you can find him at Bathroom Economics, books on economics, books on the Constitution. Thank you so much, Richard. That's it for our broadcast. Thank you for joining us.